If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56steve.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Steve Dale here with Newt Gingrich, the author, this is his latest book, Trump's Triumph, America's Greatest Comeback, as he takes us behind the scenes, talks about policy. But of course, Speaker Gingrich, and thank you for joining us on WGN. I'd like to ask you about the news, Operation Midnight Hammer. Are we safer as a result of what happened in Iran? What do you think?
Well, I think we're safer in the sense that the Iranian nuclear system was being built for the purpose of destroying Israel and destroying the United States, and the dictatorship, which is a religious dictatorship, has said publicly since 1979, death to America and death to Israel. I think when somebody repeats something like that for that many years, it's pretty smart of you to believe they mean it. So in taking out their nuclear capability, at least for the next 10 years, we're much safer. And we don't know how this is going to play out. Ideally, this is the beginning of the end of the dictatorship, and ideally you'll get to a Iranian government willing to live in peace with its neighbors and willing to give up any kind of nuclear or ballistic missile program. But we don't know if that's what's going to happen.
How do we know we took out their nuclear program? I mean, maybe they moved the contents that mattered elsewhere before they were struck. Do we know that we really did the job we set out to do?
Well, I don't think we know 100% whether or not some of the material had gone somewhere else. But it's pretty clear they don't have the material yet to make an effective bomb. They can make a radioactive device, which could be pretty devastating if set off. But we did know that they had these three very large facilities and that those were the heart of their program. It was a huge, very expensive program. And those, I think, we have pretty good capability of looking at the site. And I think we're pretty convinced that the kind of bombs we were using are simply so devastating that we took out all three of those facilities. And you'd have to go back and rebuild them. I think that would take 5 to 10 years at least.
Are you concerned about what the response may be? The Strait of Hormuz, that would affect not only us, but arguably the rest of the world, including Iran. But that's still a possibility. Maybe our U.S. troops are in the Middle East as well, Speaker. So are they in jeopardy now? And also, can we celebrate July 4th and feel comfortable in America? Are there going to be terrorist attacks here?
Well, look, I think, first of all, they have been shooting at Americans in the Middle East for a very long time. They have, over the course of their dictatorship, they've killed at least 1,000 Americans. In the last administration, Biden was unwilling to do anything. Well, there were over 300 efforts to kill Americans, and Biden did nothing. So in that sense, they may make an effort, but we're pretty good at defending our troops on that front. On the Strait of Hormuz, my guess is, and I lived through this with Reagan, I was a member of Congress, I think it was in 1986, they tried the same thing. And in 2 days, Reagan destroyed about a third of the Iranian Navy. So if they actually try to implement closing the Strait, I suspect that you'll have everybody in the region working with us to destroy their capability to do that. I think that's just, you know, it tells you how bad the regime is, that faced with absolute evidence between the Israeli successful campaign to take out all of their anti-aircraft systems and the American campaign to eliminate their nuclear facilities, instead of saying, gosh, maybe we should negotiate, they're escalating, even though they don't really have the ability to escalate. I mean, I don't see how they could successfully close the Strait of Hormuz for more than a few days before we and the Saudis and a lot of different people would come to bear to stop them from doing that.
You know, other countries in the Middle East, as of the time I went on the radio, to my knowledge, just a couple of hours ago, have not criticized President Trump for doing what he did. One of those criticisms, though, aside from coming from Democrats, which I'll ask you about, King Charles of England said, and I will quote, "I will not let the world be dragged into chaos by those who speak louder than they think." He was talking about President Trump. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, it's pretty stupid.
Okay. But the other part of that question is, it's interesting that other nations in the Middle East who might have been critical of the U.S. so far have not been.
Every Arab country lives in fear of the Iranians. There's a religious difference. There's a split in Islam. And the Sunni Arabs have been in conflict with the Shia Iranians for about 1,300 years. They were very afraid of the Iranians getting nuclear weapons. And in fact, the Saudis had begun to prepare to get their own nuclear weapon just to counterbalance Iran. So I suspect what you actually have is a certain satisfaction among all of the Arab countries to see the Iranians lose their nuclear capability. And, you know, I have no idea. I should be more coherent about King Charles. I have no idea what he's thinking. You have a country which has a clear track record all the way back to 1979. It has been killing Americans. It has been waging terrorism. The State Department, as early as 1984, declared that Iran was the largest sponsor of terrorism in the world. They have never backed off. And what you're seeing right now is, even as they're suffering tremendous losses, both from the Israeli campaign and from the very precise American anti-nuclear campaign, they're not backing off an inch. I mean, if they were not so fanatically committed to destroy us, they would find some way to say, well, why don't we sit down and talk? Instead, they're going in the opposite direction. And frankly, part of the reason that I wrote Trump's Triumph was to lay out the way Trump thinks and to lay out how he came back from what seemed to be an impossible situation in 2021, and then to project forward in the section about America's greatest comeback, where I think we're going as a people, which is frankly a dramatically more prosperous, safer, and very exciting future. And I think that's all going to happen despite the Iranians.
What you wrote in the book, much I did not know, and you wrote that you've been Donald Trump's advisor, advised him to be, quote, more passive, patient, and calm. Did he really take that advice, Mr. Gingrich?
Well, look, I wouldn't exaggerate my impact on Trump, although what you said is accurate. But I would say if you watched him yesterday when he briefed us, surrounded by the vice president, the secretary of state, and the secretary of defense, you were looking at a guy who had very calmly, with great courage, followed a strategy for 60 days, built up all of our forces, then followed a deception plan very carefully, indicating he was going to think about it for 2 weeks while, in fact, we were preparing to attack, and who was very precise. He said, you know, we're going in to take out the nuclear capability. We're not fighting the Iranian people. We're not trying to destroy the Iranian army, but we are going to take out the nuclear capability. And the plan they developed, if you saw the briefing this morning by the Secretary of Defense and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, it was an astonishingly complex plan. And they pulled it off, and this is a huge change from the way Washington sometimes works. I don't think anybody outside of a very small circle had any idea how many different airplanes, how many different missiles, how the capabilities were being brought to bear, and they executed it with a level of precision which people will study for generations, because it was an astonishing achievement. Now, and then he stopped, and he basically said to the Iranians, look, we've proven how totally dominant we are. Please agree to negotiate and don't fight. Well, I think we're getting word today that the Iranians didn't quite get the message, and the dictatorship is going to try to fight us, which I think, given that the Israelis for 9 days have had total air dominance over Iran, total. The idea that that's without our assets, and then we came in on a very precise mission, and I think we accomplished it and took out the three major nuclear sites. They said this morning, Not a single shot was fired at our airplanes. Now, you would think at some point that the Iranian dictatorship would think, maybe we're in an overmatch. Maybe we should find a way out of this fight. And instead, apparently, if we believe the news reports, they're going to double down and now try to cut off what is about 20% of the world's oil supply coming through the Straits of Hormuz. And that's just going to guarantee an enormous reaction against Iran.
All right. I want to switch gears just a little bit because you write about so many other topics in the book Trump's Triumph. The immigrant issue, that certainly sings to us in Chicago. And Speaker Johnson was just here, and he was visiting a facility. He toured a facility. That same opportunity, and Speaker Johnson is not a Chicago or Illinois representative. Our representatives, our elected officials here, have been refused entry. So it was said, well, you need 48 hours instead of 24 hours. None of that matters. And according to the law, I believe they are allowed to enter, but still they continue up till now to be refused entry. Can you comment on that?
Sure. I think if they apply in the normal way and work it out, and frankly, Speaker Johnson, I am certain I would intervene on their behalf, they can go, they can tour. What they can't do is show up randomly with no notice, bring a bunch of TV cameras, and try to get news coverage out of being denied access to a place where they haven't got any kind of official authority. But I'm confident that if the members of Congress operated in the regular system, went through the regular process, that they would get access. And I'm confident that Speaker Johnson would intervene to make sure that they got access. But what you're seeing is a bunch of stunts, like the senator in California who disrupted a press conference, started fighting with the ICE agents. If you watch the TV video, it's very clear why that senator got handcuffed, because he was literally in the middle of physically fighting with several ICE agents, which, you know, he may have thought it was a good idea, but the country at large does not want to see politicians fighting with the police.
Well, I did see the video. That's not what I saw. But let me ask you something else. You question the expense in your book of Donald Trump and Kamala Harris' campaign, spending a lot of money. Are we spending too much money on political campaigns when money could go to, I don't know, Alzheimer's, ALS research, cancer research, all of which, by the way, simultaneously is being cut by the federal government significantly?
I think we probably do spend too much money. And the point I made in Trump's Triumph is that the difference between Kamala Harris and Trump, in part, is that Trump has a brilliant understanding of everyday Americans. I mean, you know, you have a hometown company called McDonald's, and yeah. The very fact that he went and delivered French fries on a weekend just before the election, he got more coverage for free delivering French fries than she could buy in advertising in 3 weeks. It was, you know, and consistently, 87% of the country goes to McDonald's at least once a year, and 40 million Americans, including Jeff Bezos, have worked at McDonald's. So Trump's instinct for being where the everyday person is, and then, of course, a couple of days later, they had the garbage truck incident, and they immediately had a truck with Trump on it, and Trump ends up wearing a garbage collector's outfit. You know, I mean, that kind of press coverage defeats money. I think she outspent, Kamala Harris, outspent Trump by at least 2-1 during the actual campaign. And it didn't matter because his earned media was so much more powerful.
But the other part, I understand, and the other part of that question is the money we've taken away from all sorts of medical research. Now, you had no way to know this, but prior to you, we had two people on, just young people. He has it was a difficult to diagnose disease. Now he may lose his health insurance. He didn't do anything wrong except get sick. He may be fired from his workplace, a government job, not federal government, state government. But still, he may get canned as well. And all, again, he did was get sick. And the idea is to let him go before the disability could kick in. Is there something that can be done about situations like that? I talked to
I suspect in that case, if you're describing it accurately, in that case, he's going to have a very good lawsuit against his employer.
Yeah.
Because that's just plain out discrimination. When I was Speaker of the House, we balanced the budget for four consecutive years for the only time in the last century. And while we were doing it, we doubled the size of National Institutes of Health because we felt that it was important. But I have to tell you, they kept growing and growing and growing. And the total amount of money we spend and the way it's spent, you know, they had research grants where places like Harvard and Stanford were getting 65% extra for administration. And all of that stuff needed to be looked at carefully and aggressively and challenged. You know, I think we're on the edge of enormous breakthroughs. I am for research. I think my track record is frankly, pretty unchallengeable in that.
Yes.
But at the same time, I'm willing to say everything from the Defense Department to the National Institutes of Health to whatever. All these places deserve serious scrutiny because we can't keep spending money on this at the scale we're spending it.
I mean, we
can't afford it.
Serious scrutiny, no doubt. But a chainsaw to randomly cut. And the problem is I have to cut you off because we're out of time. So with as many interviews as you've done, like 4 million of them, I hope even for you this one went by fast.
It was a lot of fun, and I'm glad to do it. And I wish you well in the heat in Chicago.
Good luck. If you could change that, then I will vote for you when you run again. Thank you very much.
If you change that, I'd be more than president. Take care.
Thank you.